Welcome to the first edition of the Princeton Laxcast. We're trying something new, a podcast this year. We're going to talk to Matt Madelon, the head coach of the Tigers, each week. Or most weeks, we're going to talk to Jesse Bernhardt, the defensive coordinator, a couple times, and maybe some other people. And Coach Madelon, I've never done a podcast before, so I'm not really sure what to expect here. But sounds like it could be kind of fun and kind of informative.
Hello, Tiger fans. Glad to be here. Jerry, glad to be here. Excited to share some insight about, you know, the approach and what we're looking at for the 2017 season.
So basically, a little background. Of course, Coach Madelon has been at Princeton for 3 years, ended last year as the interim head coach for the final five games, went 3-2, and now is in his first year as the full-time head coach. The NCAA actually considers you to be a second-year head coach because you coached last year as the head coach. I looked that up. But talk a little bit, let's start, before we get into the 2017 season and what we can expect from the Tigers, just talk a little bit about this from your perspective, what it's been like to be the head coach, not just on an interim basis at the end of the year, but to take the team through the entire fall, the entire offseason, preseason, and to this point where the games are about to start.
Sure. I think the most exciting part of it was, you know, when taking over as interim head coach last year, in a frenetic situation and just getting our guys organized for the last five games of the season, it was a wonderful experience being at the helm. And then, you know, as the turnover happened and as I was named head coach of the program, you know, it began with immediately trying to fill the staff. I think that, you know, as we put a staff together and as we got the right guys in place, the excitement began to build on how we were going to approach the fall season. The fall season, for folks that aren't as familiar with the Ivy League lacrosse, you know, it's a non-traditional season. It's a smaller, quick snapshot of what it's like to be a college lacrosse player here on campus. You try to install some systems, install program procedures, some housekeeping items, you know, just to get your program up and running. I think that was our main focus. And then, most importantly, we were just trying to get our guys as comfortable around the new coaching staff as possible. Getting them to know them not only on a personal basis, but their philosophies, their coaching styles, you know, their kind of pressure points. So it's been a really exciting time. I think that being able to build in terms of a full season from the fall all the way up to where we are right now, it really has been a focused effort. I mean, every day it's being able to build in the fall and then, you know, implement systems, get our players just playing at different speed of lacrosse. It's been exciting.
So the team took a trip to Portugal, obviously. That was October 29th to November 6th. How much did that help you? I mean, obviously it helps a lot anytime you have the opportunity to have the team around. There were three games against the English national team. There was practices. There was the ability to tour Portugal and all that stuff. But especially in the context of it being your first year as the head coach with a new staff.
The trip to Portugal was amazing. Such an incredible experience. You know, we're forever grateful for our alums and our support. And the experience was crucial for our staff. It allowed us four additional practices in the home state of New Jersey, three additional practices in Portugal, along with three games. So it gave us, you know, a handful of opportunities that we wouldn't have normally had hadn't we not taken this trip. This trip was great. It allowed our position coaches to coach our guys in game situations where we were just able to grow as a program. So we're forever grateful. What a wonderful experience. And we're thankful for the English national team as well.
Your coaching staff that you put together includes Jesse Bernhardt, who's Major League Lacrosse player, U.S. national team defenseman, coached at Rutgers a year ago. Also Pat March, who came from Vermont, and Justin Tuma, who's the volunteer assistant coach, another Roanoke guy. Just talk a little bit about the three of those guys and what they mean, what they've brought here, and you know, how the guys have related to them.
Sure. We'll start at the top in terms of Coach Bernhardt, our newly appointed defensive coordinator. He joins us, you know, as Jerry mentioned, from Rutgers, and his business-like approach it's just been nothing short of remarkable. You know, he's got our guys dialed in system-wise, from fundamental build all the way through defensive schemes. His preparation has permeated through our defensive approach, and we're moving in the right direction. We're thrilled to have him. You know, he still competes at the highest level, playing in Major League Lacrosse and, you know, on the world stage. So to have that and to have our guys be able to look at that, and then every now and then, you know, as he's imitating or he's kind of acting out some of the drills, it just gives our guys, you know, a quick snapshot of what it's like, what it's really supposed to look like. Coach March joining us from Vermont. This is a guy I've kept my eye on for years, just watching him develop his offensive schemes and, you know, his eye for talent on the recruiting trail. You know, an old friend, but, you know, a new colleague, and, you know, we're thrilled to have him. I think that our offensive guys, they've responded well to the system. We've made some tweaks. We've moved some guys around. We've changed a couple positions. And, you know, our pace and tempo is picking up. So we're really excited. I'm looking forward to unveiling, you know, the kind of new offense and our new approach to it. And then Justin Tuma, got to be the most overqualified volunteer in the business. He comes to us from Roanoke, where, you know, he's the top assistant there for years under Coach Bill Pilot. And he's working primarily with our face-off guys. You know, he's as knowledgeable as they come in terms of offense, defense, but where we need his expertise and where he dominated at the college level was at the face-off X. So he's going to be an integral part of our staff, and couldn't be happier to have these guys.
Talk a little bit about what it's like to be the head coach versus being an assistant coach, as involved in you are on the field in the coaching piece, but talk about the off-the-field part, and especially talk about the Princeton lacrosse alumni group, which is a very involved group. It's a very supportive group. And, you know, it's a group that wants to see you do well. And I know that you've made a concerted effort to reach out to them and to incorporate yourself with those guys and also with Coach Tierney.
Sure. Taking over as the head coach, you know, and wearing a different hat, you know, things change clearly. But what it really looked like is, you know, when you step away from an assistant in terms of the daily grind and you take the role as the GM and the overarching leader of this organization, you know, the day-to-day focus is more on the guys and less on the X's and O's, and more on the program approach and less on the systems and schemes. You know, our goal was to hire the right assistants to allow them to use their creativity, you know, use their philosophies, use their schemes that fit within, you know, my overarching philosophy. And that's where we're at right now. I think that, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know, it's exciting to be able to bounce around from the offensive side of the ball to the defensive side of the ball to, you know, put the microscope on face-offs or goaltending. So it's been exciting. And then, you know, in terms of the main change, I think just the ability to have the final word and, you know, make sure your program's moving in the right direction every day when you wake up is the most exciting thing. In terms of our alumni crew, best in the business. You know, we've got such a powerful group, and, you know, we talked about it from day one that, you know, our goal here is to honor the past, but continue to push forward and create new things and get back to winning titles here. So the support of our group has been nothing short of amazing. They do a great job in terms of, you know, our alumni support, financial support, everything. You name it, top notch, first class. So thrilled to have the backing of those guys.
So I said this is the first time I've ever done a podcast, and my impression of a podcast is that it sort of is going to give us, and just a little housekeeping, we're going to do this every week and have it run on Thursday. So it'll be in advance of the games on the weekend. And if there happen to be two games that week, we could talk about them. And there'll be plenty of time to talk about all the Princeton lacrosse pieces. But I think we could also talk about some other larger issues related to lacrosse. And, you know, not to get too hard-hitting off the bat here, but two things I was kind of curious about. The first one is Princeton's playing four midweek games. And the concept of midweek games is a big issue now in college lacrosse, where it's tied into the other thing of the season starting earlier and earlier with, you know, being so cold out and games being played, so many games being played in February. We'll just talk a little bit about scheduling, not so much from the point of view of your view on who we should play, but talk about it in terms of the bigger picture of lacrosse and where it is, because this is all tied into the championships, which are on Memorial Day, and maybe the ideas or the discussion is moving those back off of Memorial Day. But now coaches are front-loading their schedules because they don't want to play midweek games. But here we're playing four, so it seems like it's a concept that you're comfortable with. And then, you know, talk about how early the games have started. And, you know, we've already seen Navy Hopkins and Navy Maryland, big games like that, that, you know, usually were played later in the season in better weather with presumably larger attendance and things like that.
It's truly remarkable. I mean, we're, you know, our start date's Feb 1, and, you know, in years past, there have been games on January 28th. So to think that there are NCAA Division I teams playing games before we even get to strap on our helmet for our first practice, it's shocking. But spring sport, no more. You know, it looks like it's a winter sport for us. And, you know, as we shift and, you know, hopefully we get some nice weather early. But, I'd like to see, you know, in terms of a broader topic, I'd like to see a you know, at one start date for all of men's lacrosse. You know, bump it a little later. Maybe it's Feb 1, and maybe March 1's your first game. And at that point, maybe you do have to schedule some midweek games. And you know, we haven't looked at it as a staff, and as we begin to look at it to build our 2018 schedule, we're not sure how we're going to handle the midweek games. You know, candidly, here at Princeton, they are difficult. You know, the academic schedule is grueling, and as that is in other places as well. But here we have 4 midweek games, and we actually added 2 midweek games this year. I would like to get my guys as many opportunities to play against somebody in a different helmet as possible and let them showcase their ability and put up points and make plays. So, you know, I've always been a coach that I want to play as many games as I possibly can. Now, where we have to look at this competitively is, you know, how this helps us. You know, for example, I think Notre Dame plays a 12-game schedule without any midweek games. And don't quote me on that. We'll have to look it up. But, you know, that is a strategic schedule where, you know, it's almost the football model where you're preparing week in and week out. You have the same schedule every week, and your game days are on Saturdays. Now, I see some value in that, and you have to be careful in terms of RPI and strength of schedule stuff. But, you know, all stuff we're going to look to evaluate in the future. But as for right now, you know, as we approach our 4 midweek games this season, you know, we're just blessed for the opportunity to play these games, and we're excited to get after it. And, you know, a couple 7 o'clock night games and a couple games on short rest, hopefully it'll just prepare us down the road for tournament time.
So let's talk a little bit about the 2017 team here. Princeton graduated 6 seniors from last year, which is a very small number, has added 15 freshmen. The roster size has gone from 37 to 46. It's a much bigger group. And even just because, despite the fact that there's only 6 seniors gone from last year, it has a really different feel to it. Maybe it's because so many young players have come into the program. But let's talk a little bit about who's who in 2017. And I think, you know, if you want to start with a couple of guys in the midfield, we can start with Zach Currier and Austin Sims. And, you know, Zach is as good an all-around player as there is in college lacrosse. And Austin Sims, I think, is on the verge of becoming one of the real breakout stars.
Sure. Like Jerry mentioned, you know, bringing 15 guys in, it's a big freshman class and only losing 6. And, you know, we're fortunate for that. We've been trying to bump this roster and grow this roster, you know, not only to help us practice in certain situations, but to make it more competitive, to add more depth, you know, just a positive thing all around. So with that being said, we have 11 seniors. And what's made the transition early in terms of bringing in a large freshman class is the leadership of those 11 seniors, specifically Gavin McBride and Bear Goldstein, our captains. But looking forward into the 2017 season and starting with guys like Zach Currier and Austin Sims, those are going to be 2 mainstays on the offensive end for us. And, you know, like Jerry had mentioned, Zach Currier is a unique talent, throwback style middie, can make plays in between the lines, can take faceoffs, can play man up, can play man down, can play wings, can run in transition, can play settled offense. You know, he's kind of the pulse of our team right now, and both emotionally and physically. So, you know, we're excited for him to kind of pave the way offensively for us. And he's just, you know, his IQ, his approach, his relationship with our offensive coordinator, Coach March, you know, his voice on the field, it's all so impressive. So we're excited, you know, for our Tiger fans to get to watch him rip it up this year. And then Austin Sims, his counterpart, you know, he's worn a lot of hats for us here, and he's kind of stepping in the role to be one of our primary offensive guys, and we are looking forward to him having a breakout year. And, you know, his IQ, his skill set allows him to be extremely versatile in terms of playing above the cage, on the wings, behind the cage, in transition. So he's another one that, you know, in terms of our midfield is, you know, he'll be an exciting player to watch.
Let's talk about the attack, and let's start with Gavin McBride, one of the 2 co-captains you mentioned, Bear Goldstein, the other one. Gavin, very under the radar guy somehow. He wasn't first team, second team, or honorable mention all Ivy League a year ago, despite the fact that he led the team with 26 goals. He's had at least 3 in each of the last 5 games. It's the longest streak for Princeton since Sean Hartofalos did that in 2001. Chris Massey has the record of 8 straight games. So you're talking about elite scorers, and then you're putting Gavin McBride up there with. And yet, you know, he's such an under the radar guy. I mean, he doesn't really get much individual attention and individual accolades, but he just produces game after game after game, and he's done that for the last 2 years. No goals as a freshman, 24 as a sophomore, 26 as a junior, so he brings 50 into his senior year.
You know, Gavin's got one of those storybook careers. Came in here as a freshman, didn't get a lot of time, but got to watch guys like Tom Schreiber, Mike McDonald, Ryan Ambler, Kip Orban produce at a high level. You know, and then went home with a burning fire, you know, in his belly to work out, get better, fine-tune his stick. You know, and he comes back his sophomore year and plays the role of a complimentary player. And what's most impressive about Gavin McBride is his level of consistency. What we look for our guys in and day out is consistent effort, consistent attitude, consistent approach. And, you know, he really embodies that. And that's also why he's at the helm of our team and leading it as one of our captains. I think that, you know, Gavin's production from our sideline is not really a surprise. He's in the right place at the right time. He makes the right plays. He plays within his skill set. You know, when there is time to make a creative play, he makes it, but he makes it fundamentally and with the framework of our offense. So Gavin's a special one. You know, we will absolutely miss him, you know, moving forward after 2017. But, you know, he's essentially an assistant offensive coordinator on the field. And you'll get a feel for that as you watch games and you see him controlling and moving us and calling set motions. But, you know, we're blessed that we're able to coach a guy like that.
So I don't want to go position by position because I don't want you to leave anybody out. Because one thing I'll say is that it's a team with a lot of interchangeable parts. You could see a lot of different guys playing on defense, for instance, and you can see a lot of different guys playing close defense or long stick midi or both at any given time. You got guys, a lot of short stick D-middies who give you a lot of options at that position. And then there's a lot of guys who've played a lot as offensive players. And I don't really want to go name by name because we're going to forget somebody and, you know, you don't want to do that. But one name that we really should talk about is Michael Sowers, who, you know, he comes into Princeton with a resume that a lot of guys can't match up to. He's the all-time leader in assists in high school across in the history of the United States of America at 402 assists in high school. He was the leading scorer of the USU-19 team. He was in double figures in goals and assists. You know, he had what you said was a fall against Denver and then the games in Portugal in which you saw glimpses of the potential that he has without actually reaching his fullest potential, and yet his numbers were extraordinary in those games and on that trip. So to talk a little bit about Michael Sowers coming in here, you know, he's been a name that's been committed here at least unofficially for a few years, and so people have been looking forward to having him come here. You know, what kind of impact does he make from day one, and you know, are we putting too much hype on him and too much pressure on him?
So to answer the last question first, you know, I'm not sure we're putting too much hype or, you know, too much pressure on him. And I don't think he feels that because on a day-to-day basis, you know, we're not asking him to shoulder that weight, at least not right now. So, you know, we've allowed him to come in and learn our schemes, learn the different personnel. And, you know, we were going to wait and kind of see how the chips fell and see where he fell on the depth chart. And, you know, from day one, he jumped out. You know, he stood out from day one. And, you know, what's most impressive about these guys is as talented as they are on the field, you know, the work he puts in off the field in terms of, you know, his extras and fine tuning his weaknesses and learning our schemes and studying, you know, the defenses he's going to go against. You know, it's impressive. I remember, you know, he'd probably get embarrassed, but you know, a phone call, you know, not long after Christmas break when we're getting into, you know, we're getting into our, you know, 4 weeks off as a university. And, you know, I get a call from Michael Sowers one morning and, you know, he's watching some practice film and he's just evaluating, you know, one technique he's working on that he seems to be deficient at. And it's that approach and that mindset that's got him to where he is and will continue to allow him to grow. He's a special one. We're looking forward to unleashing him, but what makes him most impressive is that he'll do it all within the framework of our system, you know, and, you know, we're excited for it. And, you know, Tiger fans, again, keep your eyes out for number 22.
So the season starts Saturday, NJIT at Princeton. That's a 3:00 faceoff at on Sherrod Field. And then Tuesday night at 6:00, Marist will be here. You know, NJIT clearly is a third-year program. They've clearly struggled to try to build the program. Last year it was 21-4. I think they're a little improved, although they've had a lot of turnover, so they're still mostly freshmen and sophomores. Then Marist comes here Tuesday night. you know, Marist is a team that maybe people don't see the name Marist and realize how good they are, but Marist is very good. So you're starting the season with two games right in a row. You know, then there's another game against Hofstra the following Saturday. There's five home games to start the season, but talk a little bit about just going into NJIT and Marist.
You know, we're really excited about this up-and-coming Saturday. I mean, to open up this week and get up on Monday and know that it's game week, you know, you can just feel the energy in our locker room. And, you know, as we go into NJIT and you know, their staff, head coach Travis Johnson and, you know, his right-hand man Brad Conlon, they've been doing a nice job over there. And they continue to get – they continue to build that program. So, you know, we're looking to get our systems, you know, on field, execute them at a high level, play with the proper energy, play with the proper aggressiveness, and – you know, so as much as, you know, we want to focus on the opponent this early in the season, you know, we're still really, really focused on ourselves. So we're looking forward to putting that to the test. And like Jerry mentioned, you know, bringing Marist in on a Tuesday night, you know, Coach Keegan Wilkinson up there has done an outstanding job with this program. Year in and year out, they continue to get better. They continue to get stronger. They compete for their conference championship, if not win it every year. And, you know, so when we were looking at it, you know, in terms of teams we wanted to schedule early, you know, we want to test our guys. We want to try to put together the best schedule we possibly can. And at the time where we are, they were one of the few teams we could find with an opening, and we were thrilled to get them on campus. So that's going to be a hard-fought team, but we're going to take it one game at a time.
I will leave you with one last question, or you can just make a comment on this. I actually looked this up. So Nick Marzullo, and you're a former goalie. He's the goalie at NJIT. He's been the only starter they've had in the history of their program. It's only two years in one game, but he started every game in the history of the program. So last year, Kyle Bernlohr from Maryland, who was second team All-America, led Maryland to the championship game. Maryland played 20 games, and Kyle Bernlohr saw 264 shots on goal, and he played 300 more minutes than Marzullo, and NJIT played 15 games. So five fewer games, 300 more minutes. Marzullo faced 371 shots on goal a year ago, which was second in Division I. He was five away from the guy from Manhattan. And in 28 games, he has seen 1,103 shots. Now, as a former goalie, what do you say about that?
Battle-tested. I think that that's the best way to put it. I think that, again, you know, if you look at NJIT and the story of their program, you know, they are growing, they are young. So, you know, as they kind of try to solidify their systems and their personnel, it seems like they're giving up a lot of shots. So, you know, I think you got to give the young guy credit for standing back there and backstopping that program. And as they started up, you hope that he continues to grow and get better. And, you know, I think that it's an incredible stat.
I mean, as a former goalie, like, you know, you could relate to how painful that must be to stand there for that many shots. I give him a lot of credit. I mean, that's, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, we've seen a lot of first-year programs in Cleveland State this year, a first-year program with Dylan Sheridan as their head coach, and it's not easy to build a program from scratch. And they, you know, some of them take different approaches. They try to get some transfer guys or, you know, and you know, give NJIT a lot of credit, and I give those guys a lot of credit for building that program, and I give Nick a lot of credit for standing. I know he's worked at summer camps here at Princeton, and, you know, I met him a couple of times. He's what you would think of a kid who's a goalie and has seen 1,100 shots in two plus years. But anyway, I think this concludes our first podcast, and I think it went pretty well. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do this every week, and we'll bring some information to people that are interested in Princeton lacrosse, and be a way to follow the team, and we can talk about some of the issues around college lacrosse. And I'm looking forward to it, and thanks for being here.
Guys, again, appreciate it. First podcast in the books. Go Tigers. We'll see you Saturday at 3 p.m.
Saturday, 3 p.m., NJIT at Princeton, and then Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, Marist at Princeton. For head coach Matt Madelon, Jerry Price, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.